Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlenka with another episode reading The Synthesis of Yoga by Sri Aurobindo. We left off in the last episode about the natural successions of the action of the yoga, and that the movements are indeed not always or absolutely arranged in a strict succession to each other. The next stage begins in part before the first is completed. The first continues in part until the second is perfected. The last divine working can manifest from time to time as a promise before it is finally settled and normal to the nature. Always, too, there is something higher and greater than the individual which leads him even in his personal labor and endeavor. Often he may become, and remain for a time, wholly conscious, even in parts of his being permanently conscious, of this greater leading behind the veil. And that may happen long before his whole nature has been purified in all its parts from the lower indirect control. Even he may be thus conscious from the beginning. His mind and heart, if not his other members, may respond to that seizing and penetrating guidance with a certain initial completeness from the very first steps of the yoga. But it is the constant and complete and uniform action of the great direct control that more and more distinguishes the transitional stage as it proceeds and draws to its close. This predominance of a greater diviner leading, not personal to ourselves, indicates the nature's increasing ripeness for a total spiritual transformation. It is the unmistakable sign that the self-consecration has not only been accepted in principle, but is fulfilled in act and power. The Supreme has laid his luminous hand upon a chosen human vessel of his miraculous light and power and Ananda. Self-surrender in works, the way of the Gita, proceeds with stating that life, not a remote, silent, or high, uplifted, ecstatic, beyond life alone, but life is the field of our yoga. The transformation of our superficial, narrow, and fragmentary human way of thinking, seeing, feeling, and being into a deep and wide spiritual consciousness and an integrated inner and outer existence and of our ordinary human living into the divine way of life must be its central purpose. The means towards the supreme end is a self-giving of all our nature to the divine. Everything must be given to the divine within us, to the universal all, and the transcendent supreme. An absolute concentration of our will, our heart, and our thought on that one and manifold divine, an unreserved self-consecration of our whole being to the divine alone. This is the decisive movement, the turning of the ego to that which is infinitely greater than itself, its self-giving and indispensable surrender. Now, the life of the human creature, as it is ordinarily lived, is composed of a half-fluid mass of very imperfectly ruled thoughts, perceptions, sensations, emotions, desires, enjoyments, acts, mostly customary and self-repeating, in part only dynamic and self-developing, but all centered around a superficial ego. The sum of movement of these activities eventuates in an internal growth which is partly visible and operative in this life, and partly a seed of progress in lives hereafter. This growth of the conscious being, an expansion, an increasing self-expression, a more and more harmonized development of his constituent members, is the whole meaning and all the pith of human existence. It is for this meaningful development of consciousness by thought, will, emotion, desire, action, and experience, leading in the end to a supreme divine self-discovery, that man, the mental being, has entered into the material body. All the rest is either auxiliary and subordinate or accidental and otios. That only matters which sustains and helps the evolution of his nature and the growth, or rather the progressive unfolding and discovery of his self and spirit. The aim set before our yoga is nothing less than to hasten the supreme object of our existence here. Its process leaves behind the ordinary tardy method of slow and confused growth through the evolution of nature. For the natural evolution is, at its best, an uncertain growth under cover, partly by the pressure of the environment, partly by a groping education and an ill-lighted, purposeful effort, and only partially illumined and half-automatic use of opportunities, with many blunders and lapses and relapses. A great portion of it is made up of apparent accidents and circumstances and vicissitudes, though veiling a secret divine intervention and guidance. In yoga, we replace this confused, crooked crab motion by a rapid, conscious, and self-directed evolution, which is planned to carry us, as far as can be, in a straight line towards the goal set before us. Now, in a certain sense, it may be an error to speak of a goal anywhere in a progression which may well be infinite. Still, we can conceive of an immediate goal, an ulterior objective beyond our present achievement towards which the soul in man can aspire. There lies before him the possibility of a new birth. There can be an ascent into a higher and wider plane of being, and its descent to transform his members. An enlarged and illumined consciousness is possible that shall make of him a liberated spirit and a perfected force. And if spread beyond the individual, it might even constitute a divine humanity, or else a new, a supermental, and therefore a superhuman race. It is this new birth that we make our aim. A growth into a divine consciousness is the whole meaning of our yoga, an integral conversion to divinity not only of the soul, but of all the parts of our nature. So our purpose in yoga is to exile the limited outward-looking ego and to enthrone God in its place as the ruling inhabitant of the nature. This means, first, to disinherit desire and no longer accept the enjoyment of desire as the ruling human motive. The spiritual life will draw its sustenance not from desire, but from a pure and selfless spiritual delight of essential existence. And not only the vital nature in us, whose stamp is desire, but the mental being too must undergo a new birth and a transfiguring change. Our divided, egoistic, limited, and ignorant thought and intelligence must disappear. In its place, there must stream in the catholic and faultless play of a shadowless divine illumination, which shall culminate in the end in a natural, self-existent truth consciousness, free from groping half-truth and stumbling error. Our confused and embarrassed ego-centered small-motivated will and action must cease and make room for the total working of a swiftly powerful, lucidly automatic, divinely moved and guided, unfallen force. There must be implanted and activized in all our doings a supreme, impersonal, unfaltering, and unstumbling will in spontaneous and untroubled unison with the will of the divine. The unsatisfying surface play of our feeble, egoistic emotions must be ousted, and there must be revealed instead a secret, deep, and vast psychic heart within that waits behind them for its hour. All our feelings, impelled by this inner heart in which dwells the divine, will be transmuted into calm and intense movements of a twin passion of divine love and manifold Ananda. This is the definition of a divine humanity or supramental race. This, not an exaggerated or even a sublimated energy of human intellect and action, is the type of the Superman whom we are called to evolve by our yoga. In the ordinary human existence, an outgoing action is obviously 3/4 or even more of our life. It is only the exceptions, the saint and the seer, the rare thinker, poet, and artist who can live more within themselves. These indeed, at least in the most intimate parts of their nature, shape themselves more in inner thought and feeling than in surface act. But it is not either of these sides separated from the other, but rather a harmony of the inner and outer life made one in fullness, transfigured into a play of something that is beyond them, which will create the form of a perfect living. A yoga of works, a union with the divine in our will and acts, and not only in knowledge and feeling, is then an indispensable and inexpressibly important element of an integral yoga. The conversion of our thought and feeling without a corresponding conversion of the spirit and body of our works would be a maimed achievement. But if this total conversion is to be done, there must be a consecration of our actions and outer movements as much as of our mind and heart to the divine. There must be accepted and progressively accomplished a surrender of our capacities of working into the hands of greater power behind us, and our sense of being the doer and worker must disappear. All must be given for a more direct use into the hands of the divine will, which is hidden by these frontal appearances. For by that permitting will alone is our action possible. A hidden power is the true Lord and overruling observer of our acts, and only He knows, through all the ignorance and perversion and deformation brought in by the ego, their entire sense and ultimate purpose. There must be effected a complete transformation of our limited and distorted egoistic life and works into the large and direct outpouring of a greater divine life, will, and energy that now secretly supports us. This greater will and energy must be made conscious in us and master. No longer must it remain, as now, only a superconscious, upholding and permitting force. There must be achieved an undistorted transmission through us of the all-wise purpose and process of a now hidden omniscient power and omnipotent knowledge, which will turn into its pure, unobstructed, happily consenting and participating channel all our transmuted nature. This total consecration and surrender, and this resultant entire transformation and free transmission, make up the whole fundamental means and the ultimate aim of an integral karma yoga. Well, what a fine place to pause for today. We shall continue with another episode next week, God willing. Thank you for tuning in to Oroville Radio. May the light guide your days. Signing off for now. Bye-bye.
This is Oroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.